All yours, bro.
All right, thank you, guys.
Honestly, I feel honored to come and talk to you today. It's really interesting. I was actually meant to speak last week, and I was going to talk about a completely different topic. I was going to talk about something called like Crash Course on Christianity. Had an idea a couple weeks ago, you know, I was going to talk about what is Christianity, like what's the whole point of it, like. But it just, I kept getting like roadblocks on it. Every time I try to write something, I just kept getting roadblocks. And then only about 4 days ago, like Shad asked me, he's like, can you do a message? And then I was like, okay, well, I have no idea what I'm going to talk about. But a couple things kept pointing me towards the story of Job. So I had 4 days to kind of write up this message. And the story of Job is pretty big. Like in the Bible, it's 42 chapters. So today I'm going to try to condense it as much as I can into one kind of message. And we'll do two main things today. I want to actually, I might just bring this laptop here. I want to just literally tell you the story. For those of you who don't know the story of Job, I just want to literally tell you the story, what happens in it, what's it about. And then we'll just get some key messages we can kind of apply to our day-to-day life. All right, so let's actually talk about the story. So it goes like this. In the land of Uz, which is not Oz, like Australia, it was a different place, there lived a man whose name was Job. He was blameless and upright. He feared God and shunned evil. He had 7 sons, 3 daughters, and owned 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 donkeys, and had a large number of servants. He was the greatest man among the people of the East. Okay, that's where we set the scene. So the guy had a lot of stuff. And then he goes, one day the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. The Lord said to Satan, where have you come from? Satan answered the Lord, from roaming through the earth, going back and forth on it. Then the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? There is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil. So what's happening here? You got set the scene. So we talked about what's happening on earth with Job's got a lot of stuff. And then it kind of shifts to what's happening in heaven. Satan comes before God. And God goes, where you been? And I underlined this sentence here. Because I found it really interesting that God would ask Satan, where have you come from? I was wondering to myself, is God asking Satan that he doesn't know? What do you guys reckon? Like, why did God ask that question? Where have you come from? I don't expect your answer. That's all right. That's why I got the answer, just in case. So if you look throughout the Bible, there's a lot of different verses where God will ask a question to someone. For example, there's a guy, a character called Cain, and he killed his brother Abel. And God said to Cain, he goes, where is your brother Abel? And then Abel's reply goes, I don't know, am I my brother's keeper? Did God not know where Abel was? Of course not. And many times in life, God will ask us the question, and he wants to see our response. In this case, Abel goes, I don't know, it has nothing to do with me. Another example, we've got after Adam ate the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and then he realized he was not clothed, and then he was trying to hide himself. God goes to Adam and goes, where are you? Of course God knew where Adam was, but he's asking the question, he wants to see his response. And I think our whole kind of life on earth is this kind of thing. God's putting us here on earth and saying, here's life, what are you going to do with it? How are you going to act? How are you going to respond to it? The second thing I underlined was what Satan's reply was. He said, we're from roaming through the earth, going back and forth on it. If you really want to know what Satan does on his day-to-day life, it is literally this. From roaming the earth, going back and forth on it. And there's a verse here in 1 Peter. It goes, be alert and sober mind. The enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Us as believers, it's so important to understand that this is something real. This is happening constantly. The devil is finding people to bring down. And 2 times in this story, you see Satan go towards God. And God asks him the same question, where are you? And the devil replies the same thing. So this is not a once-off kind of thing. This is something that the devil is constantly looking to break down believers, bring them to sin. Let's jump back into the story because it's an interesting story. Who knows the story of Job, by the way? I just want to get a rough idea. Like 1, 2, 3. I actually thought I knew the story. Then when I researched it, I realized like I didn't know half of it. This was a good learning experience for me too. Then he goes, does Job fear God for nothing? Satan replied. Have you not put a hedge around him and his household and everything he has? You have blessed the work of his hands so that his flocks and herds are spread throughout the land. But now stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. And the Lord said to Satan, very well then, everything he has is in your power, but do not lay on the man himself. Do not lay a finger on the man himself. Anyway, so what's happening here? essentially Satan saying to God, what you're doing is not fair. The only reason, you know, Job loves you and trusts you is because you've given him all this stuff. If you're basically bribing humans and bribing Job to love you. What he loves is not genuine. And God's going, no, that's not true. And then Satan goes, fine, take away his stuff and see what happens. And then we see what happens in the story of Job. And that's what I just talked about. Okay. So we jump back to what's happening on earth. He goes, one day as Job's sons and daughters were eating and drinking in the oldest brother's house, a messenger came to Job and said, the oxen were plowing and the donkeys were grazing near them when Sabans, this group of people, suddenly attacked and seized them, and the servants were put to the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you. And then while he was still speaking, another messenger came and said, lightning has fallen from heaven and has completely burnt the sheep and the servants, and I alone have escaped to tell you. While that man was still speaking, another messenger came and said, the Shandalines attacked in three bands, raided the camels and drove them away. The servants were put to the sword, and I have alone escaped to tell you. So you've got messenger after messenger after messenger, one after other. While the other person is speaking, he's saying, hey, the oxen got killed. And then he said, hey, the sheep got killed. Which I know for you guys, you're like, it's a bit hard to relate to you because you're like, I can't imagine if someone killed my sheep, how upset I would be. But like, try to kind of put it in your situation here. Imagine it was your house or whatever. Do you mean? Like, one after the other, while they were still speaking. And it continues, it goes even further. While this one was still speaking, another messenger came and said, your sons and daughters were eating and drinking in their oldest brother's house when a great wind came from across the wilderness, struck the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men and killed them. So even his kids, he lost his kids. Now, I would like to imagine what you were doing in this situation. What were you doing in this place? And then we'll see how Job responded to this. So, then Job arose and tore his robe, shaved his head, and fell on the ground and worshipped, and said, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong. Which is, I think, probably the most, like, mind-blowing reaction to something bad happening I've ever seen in my life. Like, to say, I came into this world with nothing, I can live with nothing. The Lord has blessed me so much, and the Lord can take away. Which is like, when you read this, you really want to aspire to be like Job at this time of life, just then. Well, let's keep going with the story, see what happens. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them and presented himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? There is no one like him on earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil. He still holds fast his integrity, although you enticed me against him to destroy him without reason. Then Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin, all that a man has he will give for his life. But stretch your hand out and touch his bone and flesh, and he will curse you to your face. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, he is in your hand, only spare his life. So now Satan's saying, yeah, okay, look, you took away his sheep, you took away his oxen, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you didn't touch him, so, you know, it still doesn't count, you know. See, if you actually, you know, touch him himself, see his reaction then. And then we'll see what happens. Do you guys know what happens? No? Not there? Okay. It's good then. We're finding out, so it's worth it. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with loathsome sores from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And Job took a piece of broken pottery with which to scrape himself while he sat in the ashes. And that's pretty crazy. So he literally had sores from his toes to the tip of his head. Now, what do you expect your reaction to be there? Like, I don't know if you had a paper cut, but that hurts. Now imagine that. Imagine your whole body. And even his wife said to him, do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die. You've lost everything. You've lost your animals. Your life is rubbish. Just die. It's a good marriage material happening, right? It's a strong, strong marriage. And what's Job's response to this? But he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women would speak. Shall we receive good from God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. So even in this extremely tough situation, his wife's advice, he goes, you're a foolish woman. Like, how can we, you know, like, react to God like that? The story goes on. it gets even more intense for Job. This part here is basically where the first, all that stuff I talked about, it was only like the first like 3-4 chapters, like it's very modern. We had 42 chapters in it, okay? The majority of the rest of the story occurs in this part here, and I've summarized it to like 1 or 2 slides. It's extremely short. So, now when Job's 3 friends heard all of this evil that had come upon him, they came from their own place, and there was like the 3 guys, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, however you want to say it. They made an appointment together to come to show him sympathy and comfort him. And when they saw him from a distance, they didn't recognize him. They couldn't. He was looking so like battered up, they couldn't even tell who he was. And they raised their voices and wept, and they tore their robes and sprinkled dust on their head towards heaven. And they sat with him on the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his suffering was very great. So what's really interesting about the story of Job, it's so genuine. Like you have events unveiling, like when you're reading it, it's so interesting. You got events unveiling and you're like, oh man, his friends are so good. Look at them, they come, sat with him for 7 days, and you know, let's see what happens next. And then we'll see the advice his friends give them. And then after the 7 days, Job is like just in an absolute mess. And it's so genuine. You know, Job, in the character, you can tell he's genuinely in pain. Like when you're reading this, it's not as if someone, he's like this person that doesn't experience sadness about what's happening. Like when you read it, you can tell he's in pain. He's just lost his kids. He just, you know, he's in pain himself. And after this, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. And then at this point in the story, you see in Job's life, he's just like, I would even call it like a state of depression. He's just struggling. He says, let the day perish on which I was born. Why did I not die at birth? Why is light given to him who is in misery and life to the bitter in soul, who long for death but it comes not, and I dig for it more than hidden treasures. I am not at ease, nor am I quiet. I am not at rest, but trouble comes. And then this begins a long section of the book of Job where Job's friends will speak to him, and then his friends will kind of reply. And I kind of summarize how the book goes. So there's the first friend, Eliphaz, will kind of gives him a little message, and then Job replies. And then the second friend, you know, speaks to him, tells him advice, and then Job replies. And that happens 3 times. And that's from the start of chapter like 4, and it finishes about chapter like 27. So what would you expect his friends to tell him? Before I tell you guys what they say, I wonder what you guys think that his friends would tell him. What would you tell your friends? Yeah, let's say your friend was Job. What advice would you give him?
She'll be right.
We're in the land of Uz. What else? What advice? Honestly, genuinely, like, your friend just lost his kids. He's like, for some reason, he's got sores on his body, like top to bottom. He's like lost his sheep, all his amazing sheep. Like, what advice would you give? Honestly, that you still have nothing. You just sit for 7 days. All right, let's see what his friends say. So when I was reading it was really interesting because it seemed like they were giving really good advice until the more you read into it. So at the start, his friend, I'm going to write down what the first guy said because what the rest of the guy says is pretty similar to the first guy. So Eliphaz goes, if one attempts a word with you, will you become impatient? So he's basically telling him, what I'm going to tell you, you're not going to like. If I'm going to, what I'm going to speak to you, are you going to become upset about what I'm going to say? And he says, but who can withhold himself from speaking? Surely you have instructed many, and you have strengthened weak hands, and your words have upheld him who is stumbling, and you have strengthened the feeble knees. You've helped other people, you've given advice to other people, but now what comes upon you and you are weary, it touches you and you are troubled. So it's a bit hard to understand the language in it, but what he's essentially telling him is that you're being almost like a hypocrite. You've kind of, other people with them being in troubled times, you've kind of strengthened them up, and now that when you're in troubled times, here you are, you're not coping with it, you're not handling it. And then he goes on to say that essentially what he says in the next part is that you must have done something wrong. So he goes, remember now, who ever perished being innocent? Or where were the upright ever cut off? Those who plough iniquity and sow trouble reap the same. By the blast of God they perish. But if I was you, I would appeal to God. I would lay my cause before him. And this is a really interesting idea that's happening in the Bible. His friends are basically telling him that any time in life that something bad happens to you, it must be because he did something wrong. That's essentially what his friends are telling him. And it's basically, his friend's advice is basically telling him is that bad things happen to bad people and good things happen to good people. If something bad's happened to you, you must be bad. And this isn't true. And let's keep going on from seeing what happens from here. So I just kind of summarized. I said Eliphaz basically, he believes that Job's agony must be due to some sin that Job has committed, and he urges him to seek God's favor. And then the other two friends agree that Job must have committed the evil and that he should kind of try to be better. And then that's the build that I got some like examples of where the second friend goes to him, and he basically says, the wicked are like papyrus, with no support, they soon wither. God will not cast away the blameless, nor will uphold the evildoers. And the issue with this kind of thinking is that the friends were basically telling him that all you gotta do is just repent. Repent for anything. Even if you don't know what you do, just repent. And you know, God's like a vending machine. If you say sorry, he'll just make you rich again. You know, that's all you have to do. And that's not true. So I kind of summarized it here. I said Job's first two companions wanted him to manipulate God by a tactic of appeasement, confessing to a long list of sins until he came to the one that had got him into trouble, and then God will forgive Job. And we need to understand that us as believers, there are times in our life where hard times will come. And that will happen. And it's not necessarily due to a certain sin that we've done. Sometimes it's these trials are to help us grow, help us to go to the next stage of life, you know? So that's kind of the little point I wanted to bring out of this message here. I'm almost done. I know it's a very kind of jam-packed message. I'll skip that first, yeah. Job was very upset with his friends, and I love when you read it, you can see how genuine it is. He's like, you can see tensions are kind of building up, and Job's like, you guys are terrible comforters, don't talk to me, etc. And the most interesting thing I found from this story was God's response to Job. So at the end of the story, basically, God comes in this like whirlwind, and he talks to Job and his friends. And his response was really different than what I would expect. Does anyone know what God told Job after all of this happened? No, genuinely, does anyone know? Like, seriously, no? No? That's cool. That's all right. Then it'll be even better to tell you. So there's three main things that God basically says. God basically tells Job who he is compared to who God is. And it's just a list of a series of questions God just asked Job. He goes, were you at the beginning when I created the world? You know, do you know where the winds come from that causes like the waves to move? Like, do you know this? Do you know this? Do you know this? And it puts Job back in his place, because this whole time Job's like, God, why did you do this to me? Why did you do this to me? You know, like he's almost angry at God. He's like, he's trying to get a logical reason in his head why certain things are happening. And then these are just the different things that God said to Job. And so I just kind of summarize it here. I said, when God speaks, he didn't neither defend himself or explain why Job was suffering, but to do so would mean that our faith must be based on understanding rather than knowing that God, who created everything, has that knowledge and wisdom. So basically, when we're going through a tough time in life, we don't necessarily need to know that, oh, soon times will get better, therefore I can have faith in God. You know, we need to have faith in God, knowing that God, who, when we understand who God is compared to who we are, that's when we can have faith. You know what I mean? Like, when we put ourselves as God is the one that created the heavens and the earth, he's the one that was there at the beginning of time, and these are the examples that God was giving to Job. You need to understand who I am. You know, us, God and humans, are not on the same level, and that's why it's so important that our faith isn't purely based on just understanding. So, yeah, we might be going through troubled times now, but we need to have faith in God no matter what. And then I just added this verse here in Jeremiah. I'm like three more slides to go. He goes, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you a hope and a future. And that's kind of what we need to have in our minds whenever we're going through times. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways. For the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. So it's so important to have that kind of understanding. And what happens at the very end of the story? we see that Job is blessed in the later days of his life more than in the beginning. It said his livestock were doubled, blah, blah, blah. He was blessed with 7 sons, 3 daughters, and he lived 140 years. But what are the main points of this story that we want to talk about? So Job continued to trust in God and was rewarded with that. And that's the same thing with us. When we're going through tough times in life, at the end we will be rewarded, whether it's on this life or in heaven afterwards. And what I talked about after, we need to have faith not based on human understandings. If we have faith based on human understandings, then when we don't understand what God's doing in life, then we're just going to stop having faith. But we need to have faith that God knows a plan above. And that's basically the main kind of topic I wanted to tell you today. I hope something was benefiting and something was gained from it. Thank you.
Well...